Joe Schmidt has made his first two hires, but has added two new hires to his Wallabies coaching staff. On the podcast, we hadn't talked about his first hire, so I guess we'll group it in here as well. So obviously, we've had the latest news about Mike Cron joining the Wallabies coaching staff. Previously, Laurie Fisher had been brought back on board after his, I guess, 1 year leave of absence under Eddie Jones. But it's a solid coaching staff that Schmidt is now starting to put together. So Cron, he's been with the All Blacks previously. He's got a wealth of knowledge in that area, particularly, and this is what most people seem to be quite excited about, is his knowledge around the scrum, something that has been an area of concern for the Wallabies that they're looking to build into a strength. You know, we've got the forwards to do it. It's about implementing the pieces correctly. That's always been the thing with Australian rugby, is that the talent is there. It's the implementation of that talent, the usage of that talent, that has been always a bit questionable at times. Now, a non-coaching hire, but still hire for the Wallabies staff, is Chris Thompson, who's been appointed as the team manager. Now, Thompson was previously working at the ACT Brumbies, where he was the general manager of professional rugby and pathways, which he's been doing since 2022. He's previously been employed at World Rugby in the high performance and player development units, and was also a general manager of the Fijian Dura. So a wide range of experience for this new general manager for the team. I think what that will mean as well, with also having worked in World Rugby, having a bit of an understanding of their mindset as well, working in the Brumbies Pathways program, things like that as well. I think team selection is going to be very wide-ranging, but still, I think, concentrated within Schmidt's philosophy of sort of picking more domestic players than foreign-based players. Look, it's all good news for Wallabies fans until it's not, I guess. That's sort of what this is sort of, you know, we had a similar thing with Eddie, although I guess with Eddie there were some worrying early warning signs that we were just like, oh, you know, it's a bit questionable. I don't think anyone is looking at anything that Schmidt's done and questioned it at all. You know what I mean? I don't think it's been debatable, the things he's done. You know, he has his reputation as sort of a quiet sort of operator, and it's sort of been what he's doing, but he hasn't been afraid to front up to the media, front up to the rugby podcast and things like that, and speak his mind about the direction he sees he wants the Wallabies to take and things like that. So, you know, it's been, and I guess with, you know, some of the Australian Super Rugby results, along with some of the New Zealand Super Rugby results, Wallabies fans are daring to hope.
it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? As they say, yeah, in Ted Lasso, I think. So, look, anytime you get a coach coming out of the All Blacks circle, it's probably a good sign, if you know what I mean. Like, it's never going to be a bad thing. And Joe Schmidt does this well. I think he's got a wide-ranging network in the rugby world with his time over in Ireland, his time in New Zealand. So he knows what he's doing, and especially to start where he has to start for the Wallabies, which is pretty much level one, like starting from scratch. Like, yeah. Eddie Jones hasn't given him really anything to build off. Yeah, I think he's done everything right. Like, again, Fisher was the first one that needed to come back, and I think, you know, a lot of Australian Wallaby fans and Australian rugby fans like Laurie Fisher and hope that
will be a good players as well.
Exactly. So I think it was, and again, as you mentioned pre-podcast, you know, Eddie Jones' first or couple of signings were league coaches, and he was going in a direction of probably a bit more strategical, different thinking to them what he or the game is used to, whereas Joe Schmidt is a pretty straight and narrow guy. I think he's going to get the boys playing some real rugby.
Exactly right. You know, he's about, you know, sort of precision and perfection, whereas Eddie Jones' style more, I guess, akin to a bit wild and unexpected and out there. And what's killed the Wallabies in recent years has been lack of execution. You know, a terrible penalty count, decisions not going their way, referees seemingly hostile to the Wallabies and not granting them calls. You know, what reasons could that, you know, there's a reasons in that, you know, perhaps poor captaincy training, but the more like little infringements you have over the game, the more more likely a referee is to rule against you as well. So if you have a reputation, it will affect how referees see you in the game. You know, that's how many referees have come out and said that, how many players have come out and said that. It's a thing, it happens, you know? So that's what I'm going to be looking for here. It'd be really interesting who Wallaby's captain is this year.
I was literally just about to ask, I was like, putting you on the spot, you just mentioned captaincy decisions, you just talked about the captain. Obviously, Aliotoa is still out injured, I believe. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's still out. I haven't seen him back in. James Slipper is still playing some decent footy. Then you've got the likes of Will Skelton, who potentially, maybe, we don't know. Obviously, Michael Hooper no longer there. Again, it's hard now to tell you, to put you on the spot, because you don't actually know what the squad's going to look like. But you look around and you go, who are the captains currently at Super Rugby level? And so it's Tate McDermott and Liam Wright up at the Reds, Jake Gordon at the Waratahs, Brumbies, I'm assuming, is Slipper. No, it's Ryan Lonergan, I think. Ryan Lonergan.
I think so.
And Melbourne's Rob Leota, and the Force, I think, is Jeremy Williams. But I could be wrong on that one. But
not sure. I'm not sure with the Force.
What direction are you? Even saying all of those names, none of them, like, the only one that stands out that could be is a Tate McDermott, but again, I don't know if that is the call. I think if Aliotoa was fit for the Brumbies, he'd probably be there. But imagine, the issue Aussie had was what they had, like, six captains in seven games because they couldn't stay healthy. Now, obviously, that happened. But what if you're going forward and you want a bit of continuity and a bit of consistency, who are you selecting there?
Maybe someone like an Andrew Kellaway. If he's going to be consistently picked in the Wallabies side, then I would imagine he's got a pretty cool temperament that I think could handle the captaincy side of things without blowing up. Like, I've never seen, and maybe I'm wrong, but just of the games I've seen of Andrew Kellaway, I've never seen him blow up, you know? He's kept a level head about him. I think Michael Hooper had that as well. Michael Hooper kept a pretty level head about him in terms of his, when he was a captain, you know, doing his captaincy thing. So I wouldn't mind seeing Kellaway as a captain. But as I said, if he's going to be consistently picked in a Wallaby side, which I think he could be, he's playing well enough to be there, that he could stand a chance to be captain. I'm looking around at sort of other players, and I'm also looking at the post that's up on the page of the Form Wallabies XV, right, that you've got up there. Looking at those players, like, yeah, they're form players, but who stands out to me as captain material in that starting 15? Hunter Paisami and Andrew Kellaway. Tate McDermott, somewhat. I just don't know, and I don't know even if McDermott would be the starting halfback at this stage. I think he's probably between him and Jake Gordon, and no surprise those are the two that are on the list there. But if I'm thinking about a player, still, of those three names I just mentioned, Andrew Kellaway is the one that stands out to me as who would I want to be my captain, who would I want to follow around the park, kind of thing. That's what I think. You know, a bit of a break from tradition for the Wallabies, I think he's good enough to be consistently picked in the Wallaby squad, enough to be a captain. And I think he is electric when he's on the field, so he can lead by example, but also he has the temperament for it, which is really important, particularly with referee negotiations and dealing with referees while on the field.
Yeah, and one I wouldn't have picked, so interesting. I'm going to chuck a name out there now. The only issue, as we talked about recently, I just said, was like five captains in six games or whatever it was because of injuries. A player by the name of Angus Bell. Now, consistently,
I had
very good.
I had thought of that one as well.
Will more than likely be in the team near on just about every game as long as he's healthy. In my opinion, it could be a really good combo if Slipper keeps playing the way he's playing with his form. If he's on the reserve bench, Angus Bell starts, and then when Slipper comes on, the captaincy just switches over.
That's my issue, though, is I don't like... I'd want my captain to be on the field the whole game. And front rowers, you know, probably swap out earlier than maybe, you know, someone in the halves as well. So, like, if your captain's on for less than 2/3 of the game, that to me is sort of an issue. It breaks a bit of the continuity of the conversation with the referee as well, you know, of that relationship that you need to build with the ref, which was a problem. Like we said, there were 6 different captains in a short period for the Wallabies. Hence why I'm looking at this little sort of break in tradition as well, you know, with Callaway, who could be an 80-minute player if he's on the wing. Angus Bell is a leader in my mind. I think he has potential to be maybe a future vice captain or future captain as well. I don't know if I'll go in that direction just yet. He's still very young as well. Maybe you're setting yourself up there for a long-term future captain of the Wallabies. I think he still needs to learn from another captain maybe or something like that. I don't know. I like Angus Bell a lot. He's one of my favorite players. In fact, he's probably my favorite player at the moment. Like, really love what he does on the field, off the field. Love everything about him. I just don't know if the way that the Wallabies need to rebuild suits putting a young prop as a captain right now. Maybe a year or two down the track, if the Wallabies start to find some success and they start repairing the relationship with the referees, if they start having a continuity of talent on the field, a continuity of a squad, continuity of a game style plan that is successful, I think then you can have him in sort of a mentorship program with like James Slipper and Alan Alatoa, all right, on how to be a captain. In fact, you could be starting that now. But I don't know if now's the time to anoint him.
I agree. I do like the on the field for the whole game. I just don't know if a winger is the choice for a captain, I think. Again, that's that relationship with a referee. They're already out on the wing. I think it would take away from what Callaway could do on the wing. I think it would put too much on his shoulders. We have no right answer at the moment. And it's not, like, it's definitely not a bad shout. I just don't think a winger. Like,
If he plays wing as well. I mean, he could play fullback and have Nwanga Nitoase on a wing as well.
Mark's only,
you know, like, there's options, but
don't let Mark play another game. Get him out of here.
Anyway, it's a tough question. It's going to be interesting to see how it's answered by Joe Schmidt, because as you were saying, there's no set answer at this point. There's no. And maybe there's no good answer there's no obvious answer. There's no obvious answer looking at the squad and saying, yep, that guy's got front row seats to be the captain, right? And maybe someone will be revealed through this selection process of Schmidt for captain that it's like, oh, okay, yeah, actually, you know what? This was a great choice. Really, they've really stood up and are ready to be a captain. There's nothing leaping off the page right now.
Do you think you could potentially go down the route of like co-captains? As the Reds have kind of done and gone, like, you know, like in, say, Angus Bell and Callaway, say we put both of our picks together. Could that potentially happen? I don't like the idea of
Eddie
it, but
did some, happen. Yeah. Eddie did that, and I think they don't want to do anything Eddie did. I think just simply the fact that Eddie did it, they don't want to do it. I think even if it would be a viable idea, I think it's unlikely because of that simple fact.
Yeah, fair enough. It'll be very interesting what we get out of that captaincy, because as you've just said, no glaringly obvious one, which I think for most teams would spark a bit of a worry, but I think where the Wallabies are, it's not the worst thing in the world. You're at a rebuilding, as we said, we're starting from ground floor, building up. It's not the worst thing to have this issue and to be deciding this now Another word for captain, my friend, or similar to a captain, is a chief. And we have a new Kansas City Chief rugby player.
That transition. smooth like peanut butter.
Louis Riesemmet has signed for the Kansas City Chiefs for 3 years. Yeah. Mate, you are our NFL guru. Give us a rundown of this, how it's happened, what's happened, who's happened, where's it happened, if he'll do any good, what you think, because he's living up to the numbers, let's be honest.
Yeah, look, he was, I think, pretty damn good as a member of the Welsh team at the Rugby World Cup. I think he was one of the players. No, he wasn't one of the players I picked in my like World Cup squad where we picked a player from every nation or anything like that. But he was a name that stood out to me for the Welsh. Now, he was a winger for the Welsh and for Gloucester in the English Premiership. So we know he's got some pace, which is always great for NFL teams. The Chiefs have got him as sort of a hybrid running back, wide receiver, probably will do some kick return sort of stuff. If we look at his I'm just trying to find his height here, but he's reasonably tall as well. So I think he's actually got – he's 1.91 meters. So if we look – I think he's definitely got some chance to do some things in the receiving category. 6'3", which is pretty tall for a running back. So I'd expect to see him more as a receiver than a running back. Also, he's 23 now. He was 22 when he signed up to go into the NFL program. He's 23 now. So I would expect to see him more as a receiver. The thing about his age, it's important because he's young. He's got the opportunity to learn. He's an athlete that what a great thing about him is he's played rugby, so he's used to contact. He's used to getting hit. He's also used to hitting back. So I think he's got an element of toughness in there as well. So what happened was he declared that he was going to try out for the NFL. And he went through the NFL's International Player Pathway Program. Through that, he had a sort of pro day workout thing for the whole league. Then he had visits with various teams, including the Kansas City Chiefs. And he ended up signing with the Chiefs. I think they were the first team he visited, and he ended up signing with them, which, why wouldn't you? If they're willing to take you for a 3-year contract on better money than you made playing rugby, current 2-time Super Bowl chance with the chance to go back-to-back-to-back, that's, you know, pretty incredible. Now, I also have a personal connection to Louis Riesemmet, right? The connection I have is that his last name, Zammet, is a Maltese surname, and his grandparents actually emigrated from Malta to Wales, and my dad's side of family comes from Wales. So really, we're basically family as well. So definitely rooting for him to have great success in this competition. You know, we're basically the same. He's 6'3". I'm not, but you know, that's fine. It's whatever. But we're both handsome. Welsh, Maltese background. It's, you know, so basically what I'm saying is, if I had decided to transition to the NFL at the age of 22, I probably could have done it since he could do it.
So what you're saying, saying is you're going to be drafting him with your first pick in our fantasy draft. That's what you're saying.
Exactly right, Louis Riesemmet in NFL fantasy round one, pick one. Yeah. No, look, I think he's got a real chance. Now, a lot of other players have tried to transition to the NFL. I think the issue with them is that they've probably done it when they're a bit older, right? Jarrod Hayne is the one that sticks out the most, obviously. Yeah, it was, you know, he was sort of in the late prime of his career. Now, Valentine Holmes tried it as well. He was a similar age. I think he was a year older than what Riesemmet was when he tried out for the NFL. He is a little shorter than Rhys Zammit. So his potential, his height was awkward. Wasn't quite tall enough to be a receiver. Wasn't quite short enough to be a running back. Wasn't quite solid enough to be a running back as well. I think Rhys Zammit, I think he just needs to focus on his receiving rather than running back. Like, if you look at his body shape, it looks like an NFL receiver's body shape. He's got those long limbs, lanky type thing. You know, he's a winger, right? Val Holmes has more of a rugby player's build, a bit lower to the ground because he's just a little bit shorter, but he's also just a little bit almost thicker as well. You know, not quite that slender willowiness you expect from an NFL receiver. Even that is sort of deceiving because they are built as well. But he just has a more receiver type body shape than running back. And that's where I expect to see him flourish. Now, particularly for the Chiefs, who have had pretty bad receiving options since Tyreek Hill left. Last year, it's a miracle they won the Super Bowl because their receiving core was absolutely diabolical. My brother's a Chiefs fan, and you hear him complain every 2 minutes about how the Chiefs don't have any wide receivers. Maybe this is the answer. You know, who better to catch passes from and learn how to play wide receiver than Patrick Mahomes, right? Got Travis Kelce there helping him as well. Look, I think he's ended up in probably the best place he could have possibly ended up to make this a success. This is what I'm going to say now, and this is my sort of claim with this. If Lewis Rhys-Zammit cannot transition to the NFL, no rugby player can ever transition into the NFL. It just can't be done. I think he's got the absolute best shot at this. He's young, got the right body shape, gone to a great team, right? The previous people from the Southern Hemisphere that have gone into the NFL have been AFL players to kickers. We've had a couple of guys that have gone over in college and found success. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not saying players can't go over in college, find success, and play in the NFL. We've seen plenty of that. Even Jordan Mailata, I would say, is a bit different because he never played NRL level. So I'm saying no one that has played professional rugby all league could transition to the NFL if Lewis Rhys-Zammit can't do it. That's my declaration.
Yeah. And
I could maybe could even narrow it to could transition to the NFL in a skill position, because arguably, you know, Jordan Mailata plays tackle. It's not quite a skill position. It's quite a complicated position still to play, but it is definitely body shape, technique, and sort of mental side. It's a different type of transition than trying to go to a skill player position. So, but yeah. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to stick with my proclamation.
Yeah, I agree. I think even if you're a professional rugby player, as you said, the chances of you going over to learn to play tackle are very different to what Jordan ended up doing. So, look, he ran what I think it was a 4.43 in the 40, which he was annoyed about. He wanted to get under 4.4, but again, it's still rapid for a man of his size. All the numbers check out, and as you said, there's not much better place to go to than having the best quarterback, one of the best, if not the best ever, tight end in the game, teach you some tricks, and then having one of, if not the best coach in the world, teach you how to play football with Andy Reid. So, look, he's set up for success, I think. And I think he will succeed. I think he'll surprise a lot of people. And again, it depends, I guess, what your definition of success is. Like, maybe he won't have a 1,000-yard receiving season. Let's be honest, that'd be incredibly impressive. But say he has 500 receiving yards, a few touchdowns here, and is a key piece or a part of the piece championship.
If he features regularly in regular season games, that counts. You know, Val Holmes, Jared Hayne were on practice squads featured in the preseason, maybe one or two carries in the regular season, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah,
maybe Hayne not even that.
Had a carry,
you know?
Season in, but was primarily used special teams. But again, I think, as you said, if he's regularly featured, if he's going out getting active live snaps, then he's considered a success. And the fact that they have signed him for 3 years seems that they are very interested in what they can get out of him. So, it may be, first year's slow, but those last 2 years he really takes off. But again, you've got to think he's going up against kids who have been playing this all their life. and it would be, it would show how great of an athlete he is if he does succeed here, I believe.
Yeah.
Let's move on and start laughing at you, bud. Ha 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 ha. Mate, okay, let's just discuss this. The Waratahs at home against the Rebels, a team that is likely going out of the competition next year. Season on the line, and you put out one of the stinkiest of stink performances of all Stinksville that ever came to Stinksville. And now I'm going to let you rebuttal.
I mean, I said at the start of the year I didn't have much faith in the Waratahs. I've been to games. I've seen what's happening. It's true. There's not much there to be happy or proud of. And what's the terrible part is that they've had all these narrow losses. They could easily have been wins, but they've shot themselves in the foot. There's been undisciplined play, silly mistakes, mental errors that have cost them. So it's not like they're an untalented bunch. It's not like they don't have the skills. It's not like they don't have the ability to score points. They're literally doing it to themselves. At the end of the day, and this is wild considering where we were a couple of years ago, the buck for this has to stop with the coach. Coach is responsible for those things, right? The players do it on the field, but their conduct is attributable to the coach, right? The same way that Rob Penny was being held over the coals for the Crusaders performances, same way that Ian Foster, when the All Blacks weren't having the greatest amount of success, was held over the coals for that. Darren Coleman, you know, you're on the coals, man. This just, it's not good enough. It is not good enough for this squad. It's not good enough for the talent we have on there and for the results that we've had. Now let's recap. Week one, 40-22 against the Reds, with the Reds win in Suncorp. You know, like, tough game. Probably, but again, I'm not saying we should have won that game, but definitely could have put some more points on the board that were lost due to our own mistakes. Win against the Crusaders, good win, but we let the Crusaders in back into the game towards the end of the game. Not great. 2-point loss to the Highlanders. I was there for that game. I was there in person watching what happened. Silly decision-making behind their own 22, right? That cost them points, that gave the Highlanders penalties, and ultimately they lost by 2 points. They had a penalty kick at the end to win, missed it. Couldn't come up in the clutch, right? And I don't like to disparage young players much because they're still learning and growing, but this has become a growing trend for Tane Edmund, is not coming up clutch in the key moments. So disappointing on that one, and entirely their own fault. Highlanders played a great game. Waratahs should have won that game. Should have won that game. Against the Blues, again, at home. And that's the scary thing about a lot of these games have been at home, right? They're going to have to go on the road, and it's going to be not great. Against the Blues, right, 10-12, every opportunity to win that game, couldn't close it out. Battle game. They held the Blues to 12 points. Couldn't get it done at the end, though. Couldn't get it done when it mattered. In Fiji, Fortress Fiji, took it to overtime. 39-36, lost to the Dura. Tough game. Tough game for anyone to play in Fiji. It wasn't Fortress Suva, but it's still Fortress Fiji. So, you know, still a tough game. But again, a loss. A loss to a team that the Waratahs have traditionally had great success against. You know, and the Fiji coach, great, absolute baller move. When Coleman, when they beat the Waratahs, won their first game after the terrible season, which they won no games, right? First game of the next season, we went to the game, they played the Dura, and they won. And Coleman wasn't too excited after the game, and he said, oh, well, you know, it's not like we beat the 96 Chicago Bulls or something like that. After this game, when the Dura won, the Dura coach wore a Chicago Bulls hat. So it showed that the Dura had that fire. They held that resentment over what Coleman said, and it fueled them to win this game. Love to see it. Love to see it as a fan of rugby. As a fan of the Waratahs, not so much, but as a fan of rugby, love to see it. And in this game against the Rebels, I mean, I don't have really much to say about it. Right, but again, a 6-point loss. All these losses by the first one, by less than a converted try differential, right? Which is the agonizing part about it, right? Is that this team is clearly good enough, but something is going wrong where they're not getting it done. And it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. That's almost worse than blowout losses. You know, it's almost just like, you know, blowout losses, you can sort of look at it and be like, geez, we just don't have the pieces. We don't have the talent there. So it's a player issue. When you're losing by this such narrow score margins, for my mind, then you start to look at it, it's like this is a coach issue, This is a structure issue. And yeah, it's just very, very disappointing. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do to remedy it. I'm not a professional coach. But that's just my opinion on it. I'm sure there'll be those that disagree with me on it, and that's fine. We're allowed to do that. But as a Waratahs fan, it's very disappointing. And I've, since the Crusaders game, swiftly, and again, this is sort of the part of the problem with Super Rugby, is just this string of disappointing results is just increasingly estranged me from the game. It's increasingly discouraged me from watching, you know? It's just because it's just so disappointing. And that's sort of been what's been bad with Australian Super Rugby as a whole over these last few years, especially with the taking away of the South African teams. I guess when you have the South African teams in, there's just such a mix of results all across that you were always keen to tune in. But with such a lopsided competition, it's hard to stay engaged.
Yeah, and you set the bit. There's no line about it against the Rebels. Rebels played like shit as well. It was one of the worst games of the season. Both teams couldn't fucking hang on to the pearl. And in the end, another loss for the Waratahs. I can't believe, like, the Rebels, through the skin of their teeth, they're somehow still winning games. They've beat you, beat the Force, and beat Minor Pacifica, the three teams that are probably going to finish bottom three. And they've just done it in some ugly ways. Like, they haven't looked good doing it against any of those teams. So, again, Rebels are in a tough spot. I'm not choosing to pick on the Rebels. They're in a tough spot, but I'm now can fairly choose to pick on Waratahs.
Even though they played bad, I still don't think they're terrible, if that makes sense, you know?
Who are you just
saying? I think I even predicted them to be the eighth team in the top eight when we had our predictions at the start of the season. Yeah, the Rebels.
Yeah, I think I predicted terrible. Them higher.
This was before the news that they were folding came out to be clear. Correct.
And because of the recruitment, I thought they were going to do a lot better than they are. But they they're similar to you guys with three wins on the board. They have the pieces. They just don't look good doing anything with it. Like, the game against you guys, I was just sitting there, I was like, they drop balls. I remember watching the first Brumbies game. I've watched enough Rebels games now. I watched them last week against the Canes, and I was just like, this is just not good enough from the team that they've got on paper. And that's the same as what you're saying as well with your Waratahs. And it'll be interesting with your ties. As you've said, a lot of home games. Now they've got to go away, win a lot of games.
Yeah, exactly. Like this week, they're away at the Brumbies. Then they've got a home game against the Crusaders. But, you know, who knows how that's going to go. Then they are home against the Chiefs. It's a tough home game. Away to the Canes. Home to the Brumbies. Away to the Force. So a string of tough away games. But speaking of the Crusaders, the dream is over. Well, not quite over. We sort of said a two-win season maybe for the Crusaders.
Yeah, it's over. But they beat the Chiefs. The
winless streak of the Crusaders is over. They're no longer bottom of the table. The Tars, the Crusaders, and the Force all sit tied with one win, five losses, but due to point differential, the Crusaders are second bottom on the table, as well as overall competition points. So we could take some solace in that, but Crusaders no longer bottom at the table. It is a sad, sad day for Super Rugby, my friend.
As I said, this is why we can't have nice things in the world, because we have opportunities to stop the greatest sports dynasty in the world. And I'm fucking saying it, all right? You have 12 Super Rugby wins. You're the greatest dynasty in the world. I don't care. Shut up. We had an opportunity to bury them. And I'm not a supporter of the Chiefs, but they fucking blew it. And you know what's going to happen now?
Do you know who I blame? Do you know who I blame? The head coach of the Chiefs for choosing to sit Damian McKenzie.
Exactly.
To sit Damian McKenzie. In this game?
And now,
against the Crusaders?
Can we all say what's going to happen? What is going to happen?
You're playing Moana Pacifica next.
Sit him there.
Yeah, sit him. Well, a week later. But against the Crusaders, when you have the chance at making history, and you do this? You sit him in this week?
Yeah.
And now I don't think his replacement, was it Jotham or Jacobs or something? He wasn't Jacob, bad, the young 10.
No, he wasn't Jacob, bad, yeah.
I don't think he wasn't bad, but he's not D-Mac. He doesn't have cheeky grin, doesn't have the locks. He's not D-Mac, right? Sean Stevenson, I think, had a great game, but it wasn't enough. They go nowhere without McKenzie. And choosing to sit him in this game, I don't understand it. I'll never forgive why you would make that. Yeah, who is it? I'm just looking for. Is it Clayton McMillan?
Yeah.
Is that who it?
That's the head coach.
I can't. No. You're dead to me.
You know what's going to happen? And I can just see it now. Crusaders going to go on a run. They're going to make the finals. All right, and then they're going to win the whole fucking thing. And we're going to look back to this moment. Yeah. And we're going to go, Clayton McMillan, you rested Damian McKenzie when we could have put our foot on the throat of the Crusaders. And now every single Super Rugby team is sitting here watching a 13th fucking title. And we're all going to look like losers because we're sitting there, 0-5. It doesn't fucking matter because there's an 18 playoff. You know what's going to happen? It's going to really, really grind my gears. They're going to qualify 8th. Guess what they're going to do in the first week of the finals? They're going to knock out my Hurricanes, and it's going to be all for nothing, and I'm going to be so fucking annoyed, and then I will take my vengeance on Clayton McMillan. I don't know how, but I will do it.
It's purely unacceptable is what it is. It's, you know what it is? It's bloody un-Australian, mate. It's bloody un-Australian, mate. I mean, it's a good thing he's a Kiwi, but it's just bloody un-Australian. But still, it's just a horrendous decision of all weeks to do it. I get it from, it's probably, you know, the hero we need, but not the one we deserve type Dark Knight deal where it's just like, the sensible thing to do for the team, for our chances, is to sit McKenzie against the Crusaders where he's more likely to get injured than he is against Moana Pacifica, because it's probably going to be a bit more of a physical match. But, you know, for the culture, mate, for Super Rugby, for Super Rugby survival, you should have sacrificed your own ambitions on the altar of rugby, right? That's what the world was crying out for, was for you to lay it down on the line to make history, to keep Super Rugby alive, and we will look back at this moment one day with tears in our eyes as the moment we could have turned the ship around, at the moment the Titanic could have avoided the iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. If only the lookout had seen the surging ball of ice coming towards it, seen that their path was taking them towards death and damnation. If only Clayton McMillan could have seen that the Crusaders are going to go on a run in the finals and win another Super Rugby title, he would have started Damian McKenzie in this game. But he didn't. McKenzie didn't play. And the Crusaders didn't lose. And we're damned because of it. All of us.
Do you want to know? We are damned. Do you want to know a conspiracy theory that's up there with, 9/11?
Yeah.
Razor. Obviously.
Razor influenced McMillan to
head coach the All Blacks.
To rest McKenzie so that he would pick up for All Blacks.
Guess who tapped him on the shoulder? McMillan was like, hey, I just need Damian McKenzie rested. Oh, you're playing the Crusaders this week. Oh, my team, the dynasty that I helped build and grow. Oh, they desperately need a win. What do you think happened? Like, let's not be stupid. Yeah. Don't fall into that trap where everyone, it happened. Razor tap McMillan. McMillan tap McKenzie. Yeah. Crusaders win. End of story. And Super Rugby's now lost forever.
Yeah. It's the greatest sporting scandal since O.J. Simpson. I'll just say it. Since O.J. Simpson, Deflategate, Spygate in the NFL, whatever you want to call it, Tiger Woods, doping scandals in the cycling and the UFC. It's bigger than all of that, right? It's bigger than all of that. It's worse than all of that. And our souls are damned to burn in the fires of rugby purgatory and hell with the Crusaders winning another title. This is the moment. This is the time where we could have done it. Everyone else stood up and did their part, right? Chiefs did it in week one. You could have done it again. Could have done it again easily. Didn't do it. The Waratahs, the shitty fucking Waratahs did it. All right? The Dura did it. All right? The Hurricanes, your Hurricanes did it. Okay? The Blues did it. The Chiefs, the time when history called their name, history called their name, they didn't answer the call. And
on that note, we'll end the podcast there.